The Lives of a Cell by Lewis Thomas. The writers of books on insect behavior generally take pains in their prefaces to caution that insects are like creatures from another planet, that their behavior is absolutely foreign, totally unhuman, unearthly, almost unbiological. They're more like perfectly tooled but crazy little machines. And we violate science when we try to read human meanings in their arrangements. It's hard for a bystander not to do so. Ants are so much like human beings as to be an embarrassment. They farm fungi, raise aphids as livestock, launch armies into wars, use chemical sprays to alarm and confuse enemies, capture slaves. The families of weaver ants engage in child labor, holding their larvae like shuttles to spin out the thread that sews the leaves together for their fungus gardens. They exchange information ceaselessly. They do everything but watch television. What makes us most uncomfortable is that they, and the bees and termites and social wasps, seem to live two kinds of lives. They're individuals, going about the day's business without much evidence of thought for tomorrow, and they are at the same time component parts, cellular elements in the huge, writhing, ruminating organism of the hill, the nest, the hive. It is because of this aspect, I think, that we most wish for them to be something foreign. We do not like the notion that there can be collective societies with the capacity to behave like organisms. If such things exist, they can have nothing to do with us. Still, there it is. A solitary ant afield cannot be considered to have much of anything on his mind. Indeed, with only a few neurons strung together by fibers, he can't be imagined to have a mind at all, much less a thought. He's more like a ganglion on legs. Four ants together, or 10, encircling a dead moth on a path, begin to look more like an idea. They fumble and shove, gradually moving the food toward the hill, but as though by blind chance. It is only when you watch the dense mass of thousands of ants crowded together around the hill, blackening the ground, that you begin to see the whole beast. And now you observe it thinking, planning, calculating. It is an intelligence, a kind of live computer with crawling bits for its wits. At a stage in the construction, twigs of a certain size are needed, and all the members forage obsessively for twigs of just this size. Later, when outer walls are to be finished, thatched, the size must change, and as though given new orders by telephone, all the workers shift the search to the new twigs. If you disturb the arrangement of a part of the hill, hundreds of ants will set it vibrating, shifting, until it is put right again. Distant sources of food are somehow sensed, and long lines like tentacles reach out over the ground, up over walls, behind boulders, to fetch it in. Termites are even more extraordinary in the way they seem to accumulate intelligence as they gather together. Two or three termites in a chamber will begin to pick up pellets and move them from place to place, but nothing comes of it. Nothing is built. As more join in, they seem to reach a critical mass, a quorum, and the thinking begins. They place pellets atop pellets, then throw up columns and beautiful, curving, symmetrical arches, and the crystalline architecture of vaulted chambers is created. It's not known how they communicate with each other, how the chains of termites building one column know when to turn toward the crew on the adjacent column, or how, when the time comes, they manage the flawless joining of the arches. The stimuli that set them off at the outset, building collectively instead of shifting things about, may be pheromones released when they reach committee size. They react as if alarmed. They become agitated, excited, and then they begin working like artists.